Chapter 53. A Dream Fulfilled. My 11-month weaver-in-residence stint with the Goulburn College of Advanced Education was complete, after which I was able to focus on my next project. This one involved establishing my very own textile studio, in Goulburn. It's every artist's dream to have a designated space in which to work, and I was no exception. The Goulburn residency was partly funded by the Crafts Board of the Australia Council, and as a result, my work had come to the attention of David Williams, who was then Crafts Board Chairman. In view of this, I decided to apply for a Crafts Board grant to set up a textile studio in the 9-square-meter shed alongside my house. Of the grants on offer, the best fit was the Workshop Development Grant, individual. That came with a lump sum of $7,500, which was a lot of money in 1980. Peter and I wrote the grant application, and we took a moment to wish it luck, before mailing it off. My application was successful, possibly due to my growing reputation as an effective operator and spokesperson for textile crafts in the Goulburn area. Deciding what to do with the grant money was fun. Some of it was earmarked to purchase my own super fancy Leclerc loom from Canada, some for purchasing yarn and fleece, with the remainder used to fix the shed, the walls of which were both supporting and supported by a tangled web of Virginia creeper. I already knew that Goulburn is numbingly cold in winter, due to the icy winds that blow off the snowy mountains and funnel down across the city. Thus, cozying up the shed became a top priority. Thick insulation was installed, before sheets of gyprock were fixed to the ceiling and three sides of the shed. On the eastern side, two long sash windows and a pair of glass doors were fitted to maximize the natural light coming into the space. Through the glass, I now had an uninterrupted view of the beautiful lilac hedge that ran the length of the driveway down to the front gate. The previous owners had planted one white, one violet, one blue, and one magenta lilac, and repeated the planting order down to the street. At a rough guess, I figured they'd planted in excess of 120 individual lilac plants, after which they named the house Lilac Heights. The shed renovation continued. After the shed walls and ceiling were painted, recycled green tennis court lights were hung from the ceiling trusses, and lastly, the floor was painted with two coats of cream paving paint. The space was now ready to receive the loom, whenever it arrived. But in the meantime, the show had to go on. The next event was the studio launch. The floor was barely dry when 50 or 60 of my recently made Goulburn friends arrived to wet the baby's head, so to speak. Now I had a warm and spacious studio, it was time to begin work. Peter hovered in the background, offering business advice, accompanied by his oft-spruced mantra, my need to create a product mix. He claimed the success of my studio venture would depend on the production of both more and less expensive items for sale. Wearing his accountant's hat, he had already walked me through the costing process for each of the pieces I wove for the college exhibition. He was ruthless, insisting that sub-economic products be scrapped. I was disappointed, because I enjoyed the process of designing and making stylish original garments, but I understood that if my studio enterprise was to thrive, these decisions, however disappointing, had to be made. With Peter's product mix mantra ringing in my ears, I realized I needed to come up with a line of merchandise that was quick and easy to produce. The answer came with an idea, to create a range of screen-printed tea towels and aprons. I tossed around a few ideas for the name of the collection, and then ran my choice by Peter.
That's it, I love it. The Australiana range.
For this venture, I made numerous photograms of Australian native plants, and then selected the best of them, one each for bottle brush, banksia, eucalypt, and flannel flowers. A total of four designs, and took the images to a screen maker in Sydney. As I was determined to produce a quality product, I went in search of pure linen tea towels. I found a wholesaler in Sydney who stocked reasonably priced packs of 12 in bright colours. I bought 4 packs and brought them back to Goulburn for a trial run. I held my breath as I pulled the first prints on a hastily converted glass cutter's table on wheels. As I did so, I hoped against hope that this was the beginning of something big. To dress up the product, I designed a classy printed label that gave both the common name and the botanical name of each plant. Once I'd printed and heat-set the tea towels, I carefully folded each one to fit into a clear polyester oven bag with the corresponding label. I then headed off to Sydney to cold call on the scores of trendy kitchen shops that had popped up in both the city and the suburbs at this time. I vowed that I'd not return to Goulburn until I'd sold the lot. The Australiana range was a winner from the get-go. Upmarket galleries at the Rocks were by far my best customers. In the early 1980s, Japanese tourism was at its height, and my refined presentation appealed to the Japanese aesthetic. In due course, my very own Leclerc loom and associated weaving gear arrived from Canada. It went together easily. I began by weaving raw fleece floor rugs of different sizes for a lucrative niche market I'd identified on the opening night of the Morley Maid exhibition, where, to my delight, most of the floor rugs were snapped up before the exhibition had been officially opened. In a matter of months, my fledgling enterprise was moving right along. The rugs were selling, as were the tea towels, but emotionally it was a different matter, as the cracks were beginning to widen in my relationship with Peter. Next, out of the blue, came a job offer I couldn't refuse. On the strength of my super successful residency in Goulburn, the Wollongong Institute of Advanced Education, a teacher training facility, approached me, offering yet another 11-month residency. The reason? The University of Wollongong was amalgamating with the institute that had a textile department, needing an injection of new ideas. Coincidentally, I was also being courted by the University of Launceston in Tasmania, who were in need of a textile lecturer. When the institute boss became aware of the competition for my skills, he offered me an irresistibly lucrative contract to start in early 1982 to coincide with the launch of the creative arts degree. I took the job. Wollongong is a 90-minute drive from Goulburn, and I planned to return home on weekends to visit my dog and fill any outstanding orders for tea towels. I found a furnished flat, 15 minutes drive from the institute campus. Once I'd relocated to Wollongong, I could put my mind to designing the hand weaver in residence program for the institute. As this was my second residency gig, I'd not be flying blind. Thanks to the experience I'd gained in Goulburn, I knew how to maximize my effectiveness. The Wollongong job would be a many-faceted blessing. It'd offer me the opportunity to work with new people, including the first intake of creative arts students, the staff, and the broader community. I was to be extremely well paid for my trouble, as well as being offered a solo exhibition in the Wollongong Art Gallery at the end of the residency. Also, the job would provide the perfect excuse to get away from Peter, during the week at least. On reflection, Peter Bluey. The day we arrived to set up house in Goulburn, Peter asked me to marry him. I recall being quite startled, as the proposal was made by the back door, as we were carrying boxes into the house. I recall brushing his proposal aside, as I was deeply concerned about the state of his finances and the possibility of being unwittingly dragged into the mess. I'd already had my fingers burned with the proceeds of my Annandale house disappearing. I recall Peter once asking me to be a director of one of his many shelf companies, but I intuitively smelled a rat. I knew that company directors had legal obligations, and as trust was in short supply, I declined his offer. As it turned out, this was a smart decision, because, to manage his debts, Peter had opted to engage in a Part 10 personal insolvency agreement, a flexible way to settle debts without being declared bankrupt. Even though his chartered public accountant membership was revoked, he managed to retain his clients, who were probably oblivious to his predicament, both professionally and financially. Whilst our relationship was slowly disintegrating, I discovered Peter was a serial philanderer. Once the truth was revealed, I wondered how to extricate myself from the relationship. I'd already lost the sale proceeds of one house, and I didn't want to lose anything more. It took a year or so to disentangle myself, but that's another story. Relationships with men. When I was younger, I considered myself a reasonable judge of character. After all, I was a well-traveled, tertiary-educated woman. But, when it came to men, I made one mistake after another, driven by my naive assumption that the next relationship would be better than the last. How wrong I was. I came away from each encounter bewildered by the events that had brought about yet another painful breakup. With a degree of maturity, and 20/20 hindsight, I'm now better able to understand why I put so much effort into trying to sustain a loving relationship with a man. I realize I wanted to love and be loved, and yet I was conflicted. The truth is, as an artist, I prefer to be alone. A former partner once asked me to calculate the number of years I had been both in and out of a relationship since I was 20. The tally at the time of writing was 13 years in a relationship, and 50 years out. As a percentage, this translates to 26% in and 74% out. The latter would be greater now. Facts. Lilac syringia vulgaris. When we moved into the Goulburn house, the lilac bushes lining the long front entrance driveway were in need of a hard prune. One of the first jobs I did was to use my baby McCulloch chainsaw to cut back each alternate lilac bush, with plans to prune the others the following year. In spring, the pruned bushes responded by sending out masses of long straight stems, festooned with clumps of exquisitely scented blossoms. I had so much fun using the various shades of lilac to make fabulous flower arrangements for the house, for exhibitions, and for friends. In addition to the lilacs, the house came with a selection of very productive fruit trees, an apricot, a nectarine and countless plum trees. I felt obliged to use every single piece of fruit in one way or another. To eat fresh, or stew, or bottle, or make jam, pickles or chutney. Summer days were often spent processing fruit. The bounty I'd inherited from the previous owners, who'd had the foresight to plant early fruiting varieties, thereby avoiding fruit fly attack. Photograms are made in a photographer's darkroom. First, I placed a fresh plant sprig on a piece of undeveloped photographic paper, with a sheet of glass on top, the weight of the glass forcing the plant flat onto the paper. Then exposed the paper to light. The result was a perfect silhouette of the plant. The best images were made into screens, for printing fabric. Over the years, I lost count of the number of prints I pulled for tea towels, aprons, and occasionally a potholder, for the Australiana range, and later the images were used on table and bed linen, shearers' shirts, garments, and furnishing fabric. I love screen printing, particularly mixing colors on the screen for subtle effects.